Thank you very much. Whereas I'll be talking about seed production, a number of the different plants that we've been growing do have some interesting activities, even antivirals and other compounds. 9 years ago, I was approached at the Malheur Experiment Station by representatives of the BLM and the Forest Service. They wanted to start a program where they would develop seed production knowledge so that they could encourage seed producers to provide seeds of various forbs and plants of interest for wildlife for restoration activities. We're in the Great Basin at the location where I work. We have about 10 inches of rainfall a year. Mostly comes as snow when everything is so cold that nothing would grow. And the Great Basin is being invaded by many invasive plants, invasive weeds, and they're transforming the biome and increasing the frequency of fire. So there's a great deal of interest in finding a way to increase seeds of some of the more valuable species, or what's considered some of the more valuable species, and try to use them to help replant and restore these rangelands. So over the years, they've had interest in increasing this seed availability, and they started off foisting off 7 species on me, and then they foisted off another 6 species, and then another half a dozen. So now I've got over 30 of these species, almost 40, that each have trials and replicated plots. So fortunately for you, you only see a few species in a few trials. And so we're trying to get cultural practices, everything from planting the seed to how much irrigate, how to control the weeds, and those kinds of fun things. So here's the 4 species that we'll talk about today. Desert parsley is a really pretty famous group because that's the biscuit roots of fame of the Native Americans. And it's a very edible group and has antivirals in the seeds and roots. Showy penstemon, we've got quite a few of those. Sulfur-flowered buckwheat, another very important genus. And gooseberry leaf globemelon. The reason why I chose these 4 is they're sort of representative of very different responses to water. And when you think of a lot of different species, you think, well, gee, it's a very low rainfall area, and you know, how there's years that they have good seed yield and years they have bad seed yield. So do these species really vary in how much they need to drink? You know, some might need to drink quite a bit, and some might not need to, to drink so much. So this just adapted a drill. It looks like we're going to drill wheat or alfalfa, but actually we had all the things blocked off, and we're just drilling 2 rows and trying to find a way to mechanize all these things, because the BLM was choosing their favorite little plants and growing them in nurseries and little plugs, and then trying to transfer these plugs out into the field. And so we've been trying to move away to mechanize everything and find some way to just establish big strips and have those big strips then cut apart into different plots. And then we started off thinking, well, we're going to have a relatively simple irrigation system, and it got totally out of hand because we found out that we had to irrigate each species according to the time that it wanted to go to flower and set seed. No sense applying the water way too early or way too late. So what started off as being a sort of simple concept became rather complicated. To begin with, we thought, well, we're going to add 0, 100, or 200 millimeters of water total for the year for each species. You can imagine, well, really a simple design in your mind, and it turned out it did not work at all, because we had to change the timing to be the timing for each species to be when they're going to flower and develop seed. And then we have those water meters, and we measure, follows soil water. And then this is the way the plots look. This particular one is a buckwheat, where we planted it with the tractor, and the plants do survive, and they do produce something with no water at all added, other than the sometimes very meager rainfall. And each strip for each species has four rows on 91 centimeter centers, and only two drip tapes buried a foot deep. So there's 5 feet between the two drip tapes, and then you only harvest the center of each plot for a seed yield. And with 4 inches, 100 mils, we added an inch at a time every other week, and 2 inches, 2 inches a time every other week for a total of 8 inches. And so that's the way the particular strip would look, and for the buckwheat at the peak of the growing season. And then come in wherever we could with a small plot combine. We now have a better small plot combine. We got rid of this one because we couldn't get any more parts because it's very old, and we got a nice spiffy one now. It allows us to pick up the middle of the... We're trying to do everything in a way that a seed grower could actually produce a seed and deliver it to the Forest Service and BLM. So look at the results. You can see that, golly, the years varied all over the place. And if you notice, say on... Let's see and get this mouse to work here. There we go. See 2011, see how that's actually a negative response to water? Well, 2011 was a rainy year, and we got more than normal precipitation. And you think, well, they still ought to produce more seed, but we're controlling the weeds, so all the resources and the nutrients and water going to the plants that we want. With penstemon, really have a very variable situation. And you can see here again, 2011, you have a negative response. You tend to have this couple of different years with a real peak out. This is running a quadratic equation through the data, and only statistically significant results. The lomations, the desert parsley or biscuit roots, we tend to have this quite a clear quadratic, but 2011, you can see the negative returns there to the highest level of water, which is really pretty surprising because they're not using very much water. So, and you won't see any graphs for the gold mallow. Well, the gold mallow just simply didn't respond. So given the fact that we had the weeds under control and the globe mallow, there just wasn't any response whatever to irrigation any year. We had three different globe mallow species. Well, there's a tremendous difference in precipitation. You can imagine here, like 2013, 2014, the plants would come up about in March or April, and the precipitation that really counts is the precipitation that occurs between the plants coming up and flowering and setting seed. Well, there's very little precipitation in 2013-14. And the same thing happened back in 2007 and 2008. So those are the years where we got really strong positive responses to the small amount of irrigation. And you might say, well, why did you start off with such small amounts anyway? Well, we know that around in our natural rangeland, the years that a bunch of these native wildflowers actually have really good seed yields, it just takes a number of well-timed rain events, and they go ahead and have a good seed crop. So we wanted to try to get the data that would allow a seed grower to have reliable results year after year. And so in summary, you can see that the first one there is the sulfur flowered buckwheat. And in wet years, it didn't really respond. And then the first year, when the plants were really small and needed to grow to have yield, and then in subsequent years, it required up to, 170, 200 millimeters for in years where the rainfall was quite deficient. And the penstem in wet years, it just really didn't need any. As a matter of fact, it was a negative response. And in the years with less than 90 millimeters of rainfall, it needed about 100 millimeters of water. The Lomatium dissectum, the biscuit roots, and this is true not only for the Lomatium dissectum, but we have five different species and a number of selections. They almost always respond to irrigation, and somewhere around 140. There's some of them need a little bit less, some of them need a little bit more. Frustration with Lomatium dissectum, the desert parsley or desert biscuit root, is that it took 4 years for that species to really come into production. And with the globe mallow, there was no response to irrigation. Which is, it's pretty amazing, because you have very little precipitation lots of years, and even in the driest years, we got modest seed yield, but no response to water whatsoever. So I appreciate very much the opportunity to talk with you. Maybe there's somebody here that really wants to help analyze some of the antiviral compounds. Huh? We got the Ebola virus out there, and other would seem like to be opportunities to use some of these plants. With Kevin, we stuck in his porter's lovage, Ligusticum porteri. And so we've got that growing now. So maybe next year it'll start producing something. Anyway, it's an exciting project to get to work with. Thank you very much.
We have time to take off your questions. Any questions?
Sure. When you do see a positive response to the additional irrigation, does that have any effect on seed quality? Any characteristics related to planting seed quality?
Maybe it would, but we haven't followed that. We haven't followed that. Something that we've wanted to do but haven't done. We've sent seed off, but it's.
So, but you're direct seeding everything, so you must have pretty good seed quality on all of.
Well, we're direct seeding, but the seed that we're planting is seed that's been selected by the BLM or Forest Service. But some of the seed from our trials has gone on to seed producers or been used in restoration projects. Yeah, hi.
Can you tell me a little bit about your nifty new little harvester?
Well, that's a small plot harvester by Winterstiger. The new one we got is a Winterstiger. Yeah, and we dropped, I think, $164,000 to buy it.
Okay, let's thank Clayton again.